Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy connecting the light. My guest today is Mark Bennett. He is the co-author of two books, both of which he wrote with international best-selling author Richard Lawrence, namely Prayer Energy and God's Guides and Guardian Angels, which was voted best book on spirituality in 2007 by readers of the Kindred Spirit magazine. Now, he works full-time for the Aetherius Society, an international spiritual organization whose teachings he chose as his spiritual path at an early age. And his varied work includes spreading spiritual wisdom through giving radio interviews and lectures around the UK. Right, nice to welcome you onto the program, Mark.
Hi, Mike. Good to be here.
Definitely hear you lovely and clear and loud here. Now, it might be a good place to start by telling us a bit about the Aetherius Society, because I guess some of our listeners may well have heard of it, but might not actually know what it does for a living. So give us a sort of rundown on what they do.
The Aetherius Society was founded in 1955 by a brilliant man called Dr. George King, and the aim of the Aetherius Society, in brief, is to spread the wisdom of advanced extraterrestrial beings, mainly within this solar system, and also to act upon the brilliant teachings that they have given to us.
Right. So you're a relatively young man compared to a lot of people, and you've got into this quite early. What sort of experience, if any, did you have that led you to take this up as a sort of lifetime's work?
Well, I'm not a particularly psychic person. I've never seen a UFO. So the kind of things that are usually, you know, epiphanies for people, or often epiphanies for people in this kind of work, have never happened to me in that way. What it was for me was from even from early childhood, I was very interested in spirituality and in religion. Although I grew up in a very conservative area, and I didn't have much exposure to, I didn't really have any exposure to mysticism or any kind of esoteric knowledge. And then I discovered the Aetherius Society apparently by chance one day when I was 14, watching a TV program called Horizon. It was about the planet Venus. And I saw the Aetherius Society featured on this show, and I was fascinated. It was almost love at first sight, really. And although I certainly didn't believe in the teachings or the claims for many years fully, through applying the teachings that they espouse and testing out some of the claims, I found that, certainly to my satisfaction, and I'm not an easy person to satisfy, that these are true claims, however outlandish they may seem.
Right. Now, I'm really a little surprised to hear you say that you've never seen a UFO. No doubt
you have, haven't you, Mike?
I have, yes. Yes, on more than one occasion, yes. No doubt you do wish you could, but clearly you must have followed up a lot of sightings and seen a lot of video footage, etc.
Yes, I have. I would like to see one, of course, but at the same time, it's not top of my priority list, to be honest. I don't really feel the need to see one.
No.
Myself, I'd much rather that someone who didn't believe in them saw a UFO. For me, the proof lies not so much in lights in the sky, but, as I say, in applying the wisdom that I believe that extraterrestrials have given to us and finding out that it works. Although it's great to see a UFO, I don't think it's necessary for everyone.
Right. Now, I noticed from your website, you indicate that you have travelled extensively, China, Europe, and so forth. Was that in any way connected with your work, or was that sort of business?
Not really, no. It was a mixture of study and leisure, to be honest.
Okay.
I was fortunate to, you know, as a younger man, to have the opportunity to go to various places around the world. I spent a long time in China, and I feel this has been useful to me to a certain extent in understanding better how the whole world works as opposed to just a small part of the Western world. But no, it was not particularly spiritually motivated, to be honest. And I didn't particularly encounter a great deal of spiritual wisdom either, as a general rule anyway, in my travels. This is, I think, been a good lesson for me, that you can travel the world and it doesn't necessarily answer your questions. The questions, you know, it sounds like a cliche, but the answer to these questions really are within. I would say that accessing that inner knowledge can be helped greatly and speeded up, facilitated by studying great teachings, which now in our privileged Western society are available to us, be they the incomparable modern New Age teachings of Dr. George King and the extraterrestrials he was in contact with, or other teachings which are also excellent and, I believe, cosmically inspired, but may have nothing to do with the Aetherius Society. We really do have, you know, wisdom at our fingertips. All we have to do is to apply it and to come to the realization that we need to apply it, and to know how to apply it, we need to go within and do a bit of soul searching. And I think, personally, most importantly of all, we need to have the motive of wanting to help others. If you just want spiritual wisdom so you can show off to your friends, you're not going to get very far. For one thing, I don't think your friends would probably be all that impressed. But for another, you know, spiritual wisdom responds very much to motive. If your motive is to share that wisdom, to become wise so that you can help others to become wise, to become freer, so that you can help others to become freer from the conditioning around us. This is the path to success at this time in our history, I believe.
Right. So the basis for most of your spiritual understanding presumably comes through the Aetherius Society. Now, where do the extraterrestrials that have spoken to people of the Aetherius Society come from?
Well, just make one point before I answer that. They have only spoken to one person in the Aetherius Society, which is Dr. George King.
Right.
Or they, let me put it another way, they may have spoken to the whole Aetherius Society or the whole world through him.
Yes.
There is no one in the Aetherius Society who has a, you know, two-way communication system with these beings, because it's very difficult to do. You have to be quite a special person. You have to work extremely hard to be able to do that, to put it briefly in simple terms. Where do they come from? The extraterrestrials that Dr. King was in contact with come mainly from this solar system. A lot of them come from Mars and Venus, and some come from Jupiter and Saturn, and sometimes other planets as well. And there have been a number of communications also from the system of Gotha, which we are told is some 35 million light years away from this Earth. And these beings, if we were to fly in an ordinary rocket, or spacecraft, or whatever, designed by Earth scientists to Mars, we wouldn't necessarily find any trace of Martian civilization. We may do, if they wish us to, but these beings live on a higher level of vibration. So if we were to go to Mars, it would be a bit like going to the ground floor of a building that was empty on the ground floor, because everyone in the building lived on the fifth floor or whatever it might be. To get up to the fifth floor would need more than science as we know it can offer us. We would need to spiritualize our science, and one of the ways of getting to these planes would be through conscious astral projection, which again is a very difficult thing to do, particularly if you want to get to somewhere that is of the level of spiritual advancement of these planets, because these the beings on these planets, it's not just that they're like us and they're good. It's they've been good. They've been doing the right thing, following the divine laws, the natural laws, for literally millions of years. So they're not just masters, like an Earth master is a master. They are masters of millions of years of mastery. So they really are, you know, although they would call themselves human, as we are human, they are the super success story of what we could have been had we done the right thing millions of years ago ourselves. But instead of doing the right thing, we've chosen a path of foolishness, quite frankly, where we do all kinds of idiotic things on a daily basis and have been doing so for thousands and millions of years.
Yes. I believe there is a school of thought that feels that our time in duality is in fact intentional for the experience to grow spiritually, which of course is something your society is very interested in.
Well, that's true. It's true that, you know, the experiences that we are going through are necessary for us. But why are they necessary? They're only the kind of basic experiences that we go through are only necessary to us because we've made the wrong choices. If we'd made the right choices, we would be getting a much more elevated level of experience and be growing at a much quicker rate.
Yeah. What would you see as the most beneficial form of progress that we could make spiritually?
Service to others is the number one priority for us all. This is something that anyone can do. Anyone capable of listening to this broadcast is capable of being of service to others. There are numerous ways that we can be of service. You could be a complete atheist who had no time for New Age or religious thought whatsoever and still be of great service. You can help the starving, help those who are poverty-stricken, counsel those who are depressed and miserable. There are all kinds of ways that people can be of service. Writing inspiring things, in any way helping the needy, be it on a small level or on a larger level. The unselfish rendering of service is the way that we will progress. This will transmute our foibles and weaknesses. Doesn't mean to say that we'll lose all individuality. We'll still be individual intelligences. And although we'll become more aware of oneness, actually in some ways our individuality will increase, strangely. It's a paradox. But a great master who's become a great master, largely, if not entirely, through service to others, they will have... They're not all the same, these masters. They have their own areas of skill, their own different forms of magic.
Right. How do you feel we should be able to reach people to tell them about our knowledge of how to develop spiritually? It's very difficult, isn't it, to sort of get to the masses and get your message over?
Well, I hope this radio show is one example of getting out to the masses. It is difficult, yes, it is certainly difficult to get this message over. To get the basic message of service out to people is, you know, in one way it's obvious, and you don't need to be a member of the Aetherius Society to understand the importance of service. But in another way, it's very difficult because it's a message that people don't really want to hear. You'll find that the New Age movement, good though it is in many ways, is actually fraught with dreadful selfishness in many respects. There are teachers who will teach people things like, you shouldn't let third world suffering get you down, it's not your fault, it's nothing to do with you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a sense it's true that, you know, it's no point in being wantonly depressed, but it, you know, in a way it should get us down that people are suffering in the world. We shouldn't dwell on it in the sense of getting depressed and wallowing in our misery, but we should transmute that feeling of sorrow into active service and compassion. We shouldn't just detach from it. We should attach ourselves to the problems of others. And by doing so, by karmic law, we will actually transmute our own problems. We'll still have to face our problems, but karma will provide us with those experiences we need to face them in as efficient a manner as possible.
Yes, I can certainly agree with you on that. Now, you talk about learning and practicing spiritual healing. Tell us about that side of the Aetherius Society and what form it takes.
Well, Dr. King was very radical in this regard. It might seem strange to people now who may be new to the movement, but he started teaching spiritual healing in the 50s, and he wrote his groundbreaking book, You Too Can Heal, in the early 70s, or the mid-70s. And his message was just that, that you too can heal, that anyone can learn to heal. Any able-bodied person, even a child, can learn to heal. This at the time was regarded as irresponsible, as outrageous, even within the spiritual movement, because at that time, healing was generally regarded as the gift of the chosen few. Now, it is true that some people are born with certain healing abilities, which come very naturally to them, and they are, you know, apparently effortlessly better healers than, you know, someone like me who's learnt from scratch.
Yeah.
But the point is that, this is where reincarnation comes in, that if you're born with any psychic or spiritual ability, including healing, it's only because you've earned it through lives of effort. So if you know, if you have a so-called gift of spiritual healing, it's not really a gift at all. It's because in some previous incarnation, you have studied healing and learned it and put it into practice and used it correctly. So everyone's got to start somewhere. So if you're not one of those people who's been healing for life after life after life, as probably most of us haven't, then you know, you need to start learning. And I've been astonished how someone like me, who is not particularly psychic or gifted in that way at all, has managed to learn a very simple technique which he's taught, and I've had some results. Yes, it's only anecdotal. I couldn't prove it in a lab, but I've still been very surprised by the results and by the effect the healing has had on people that I've given healing to. The healing system is based on the wisdom that spiritual energy is a real, tangible force. It is not just the will of God. I mean, it, you know, there is such a thing as the will of God, but it's not all done on a whim by some old man in a cloud. It's a natural process. A natural, spiritual, divine process, yes, but natural is the key word, and sometimes it's called natural healing. By visualization, by pure motive practice, you can invoke this spiritual energy, visualize it flowing through yourself, and direct it through certain of your chakras, into certain chakras of the other of the patient, and into their aura in the area of discomfort. And this will nourish their subtle body, their auric body, their astral body, their psychic centers. And it's a case that if you damage the physical body, that's reflected in the subtle body. If you damage the subtle body, that's reflected in the physical body to some extent. So the reverse is also true, that if you help the physical body, you help the subtle body. And if you help the subtle body, you help the physical body. And that's what spiritual healing is about. The goodness that you're injecting into the subtle aspect of the patient is then reflected in their physical health.
Can you only do that type of healing when the person is present with you, or is it a form of absent healing as well?
Both. You can do both. It's slightly different depending on whether the person is present or not. Probably, usually, it's more effective if the person is present, but it can certainly be extremely effective even when the person is not. And this is something we do a lot of in the Aetherius Society. We get together, we chant mantras, say prayers, do visualizations, opening the chakras up, so to speak, not closing them, not closing the palms together, but holding the hands outwards, visualizing this energy flowing through us. And very importantly, visualizing the patient or the person suffering being as they should be, you know, healthy and full of spiritual joy. You shouldn't dwell on the negative visualization. You shouldn't lie to yourself or lie to them and pretend that they're well when they're not. But you should empower your healing through correct visualization, because visualization is, as it were, a kind of magnetic pull into which things manifest.
Yes, indeed. So you're really creating what you want the patient to be and not focusing on what you don't want them to be.
In a sense, yes. But I'd like to add to that the important point that when you do send healing to someone, you do have to be a little bit careful not to try and impose your will on the person. For example, if someone is of a very different opinion to you and you're sure that they're wrong, you should never, you know, send out energy or send out a prayer for them to change their mind to your way of thinking. That is a kind of negative magic, even if you're right, because you're unduly interfering with their free will. And you don't have the right to do that. None of us can be sure enough, you know, what someone should be doing. And to some extent, people have to be allowed to make their own mistakes. I'd stress that to some extent.
Absolutely.
But when it comes to prayers and healing, you should not impose your will on another person. When we give absent healing in the Aetherius Society, for a start, we always seek consent of the patient, if they're able to give their consent. And the healing we send out is an impersonal energy, which the higher consciousness, it may not be conscious, the higher consciousness of that patient can choose whether to use or reject. It's an energy. It's a bit like the difference between giving a starving man something to eat as opposed to force-feeding them.
Yes.
We offer them something to eat. We don't force it down their throats. So that way, you're giving people the opportunity to help themselves with the energy that you're sending them, but you're not taking control of their free will or their lives.
Yes. Well, I'm certainly with you in that respect. Now, healing a person is one thing, but you actually refer to helping to heal the world as a whole. Now, what is the difference, if any, in the healing for a person as opposed to the world?
Well, in some ways it's very similar. It's obviously much more important to do world healing, but both are important. And in some ways the method can be similar. Depends exactly what kind of world healing it is. But in the sense of just visualizing the energy to flow through you, with the hands, the palms facing outwards, going through the heart chakra, the front of the heart chakra and the palms, visualizing energy flowing out to perhaps a troubled spot or to the whole world, seeing this place enveloped in white light, seeing the people there happy, healthy, spiritual, you know, in a vague kind of way. You don't want to be too specific about what they ought to be like, but just trying to make it as positive as possible. In that way, world healing can be very similar to absent healing for an individual. And this is something that we can all do. It's easy to do. It's pleasant to do. And it really does make a difference. If enough, you know, one person praying for peace, sending out a positive visualization, is not going to suddenly bring about world peace, no. But a million lots of one people doing it could make a huge impact. It's, you might say it's a drop in the ocean, but the ocean is made up of drops. And it could be that one extra prayer, or one extra visualization that one person does that just tips the balance between success and failure in the world reaching some spiritual end.
Yes.
There's other aspects to world healing too, which involves certain members of the Aetherius Society working in direct cooperation with extraterrestrial beings, using methods worked out when Dr. King was alive. So although we don't have two-way contact, we do still have a way of cooperating with them. We use, for example, spiritual machinery. This is a very radical idea. There are machines devised by Dr. King through which spiritual energy will flow from a terrestrial or a cosmic source. So when there's a disaster in the world, for example, the Haiti disaster, we will activate one or more of these machines, and spiritual power from a cosmic source will flow through this machine to a given target to bring about whatever healing, inspiration, protection, whatever is necessary.
Yes. I think I can recall seeing photographs of your groups doing that type of work. Would it be correct to refer to these pieces of machinery as sort of sound boxes?
They do look a little bit, some of the machinery that we use does look a little bit like a box. It is a box in a sense. And what you're thinking of probably is an Operation Prayer Power battery. In Operation Prayer Power, members of the Aetherius Society get together, do certain visualizations, chant certain mantras which they've been initiated into in the correct way. And it will be a rota of people who go up to the battery and say certain blessings and prayers from a wonderful series of channeled cosmic transmissions called the 12 Blessings, which is actually given by the Master Jesus, we believe, through the mediumship of Dr. George King. Now, the purpose of all this is, as I said before, spiritual energy is a real, tangible force. As such, it can be stored in certain physical apparatus, and that's what the prayer power battery is for, to store this energy. So you'll have the people chanting mantra, the people saying the prayers, they are invoking the energy and directing it into the battery, which is made with certain materials in a certain way that is very effective at storing this power. In a time of crisis, for example, we could choose to discharge one of these batteries, all the energy, release the energy within the battery, using another piece of equipment called a spiritual energy radiator. And this energy would flow through the spiritual energy radiator and be directed by cosmic intelligences, by extraterrestrial beings, to the focal point where it was needed. So that's an example of extraterrestrials actually using our energy, because the energy from Operation Prayer Power is terrestrial energy, it's not extraterrestrial energy.
Well, thank you very much for explaining that in some detail. Now, you say that it is possible to communicate psychically with people on other realms, and even with beings on other planets, and I certainly wouldn't dispute that. And indeed, I often get emails from people wanting to know how they can do it. Now, what would your advice be in that case?
Well, it's a complicated area, I'm afraid. There are people out there who would say, yes, come on my workshop and you can learn to contact whatever extraterrestrial you wish. Now, this is just not the case. What you're talking about is mediumship, effectively, even though that may be a slightly old-fashioned word. The ability to talk to people or to communicate with people on other realms and other planets, or other realms of other planets, It's a difficult thing to do. It's a very difficult thing to do. There are mediums who can communicate with ordinary people on other realms of this earth, people who've passed away and are now resident, still on earth, but on a different realm of this earth. Now that's one thing. Being able to communicate with a great master who's passed away on this earth, that is another thing altogether. And being able to communicate with a great extraterrestrial master, that is yet another thing. They're not all the same. Just because a medium can contact your dead auntie Mavis does not mean that that same medium can contact the master Count Saint Germain, or the master Aetherius, or the master Jesus. That would require different training and a different caliber of spiritual attainment through effort. It's all about effort through the lives. None of it's a gift. None of it's done on a whim. Anyone with any spiritual power has worked for that through the lives.
What could a person do, Mark, when they're starting out to ensure that they don't contact, say, lower entities? How can they protect themselves?
My advice would be, as a general rule, that being a medium or becoming mediumistic should not be our top priority. It's a difficult thing to do. It's potentially a dangerous thing to do for the very reason that you've laid out. The inexperienced medium or the medium who does not have a lot of spiritual discipline in their life may well find themselves in touch with a lower entity, may become possessed, may give out wrong advice, may do all kinds of harm to themselves and others through this. So I would say that anyone wanting to develop themselves spiritually would be much better off learning how to do something like give spiritual healing, which we've talked about earlier, rather than learning to be a medium. This is something which, you know, people can learn in a gradual, natural way later on in their development, I think, when they have already got a certain amount of yogic discipline in their lives, when they have been practicing other forms of spiritual action for really quite some time. And when I say quite some time, I mean probably lives, not a few months. It is some people's destiny to learn mediumship, yes. Richard Lawrence was one such person who I wrote the two books with. He was not born as a medium. He developed this power through practicing the spiritual, and I stress that, the spiritual exercises taught by Dr. George King. And for him, the fruits of these spiritual practices, or one of the fruits, was this ability. Because when you do spiritual practices, when you perform spiritual service, the results of that, the way you evolve as a result, can come in different ways to different people, depending on the individual's karmic pattern. You know, every case could be different. You could get one person who could devote themselves to service, and as a result, develop a great ability at art, because that might be what they need in their life, or more likely what they need to be of service to others. They need to do certain designs, say, to produce certain literature or posters to help spread spiritual truth. So their power will not be a psychic power in the ordinary sense of the term. It will come in a different form. It will come in the most useful form. Because for that individual, it may be more useful for them to be good at art or computer design than it would be for them to communicate with somebody who's dead. You see what I mean? So,
yes.
Also, I'd like to say that when Richard developed his mediumistic ability, he was in the extremely privileged position of having the best possible guidance that anyone could have. That of Dr. King, who was probably the most brilliant medium who's ever lived. And that makes a big difference. if you had the guidance of a yoga master, which Dr. King was, through his intense practice of this spiritual science that is yoga, and someone who's mastered the basic forms of mediumship, if you have such a person guiding you, then you'll still probably make the odd mistake, but it's a much safer endeavor. It's a bit like learning to be a racing car driver. Are you going to just buy yourself a Formula One car and go out down your local, you know, road to the supermarket and see how it goes with your foot hard on the pedal? Or are you going to do it on a proper racing track under proper supervision?
Yes.
You know, and actually I would say that messing about with mediumship in the wrong way could be more dangerous long term than messing about with a Formula One car. Formula One car, what you're going to do, worst you're going to do is kill yourself.
Yes.
Now, mediumship, if you really go down the wrong road with mediumship, you could do even worse than kill yourself. You could find yourself going down a very dark road of involution rather than evolution that could contaminate your progress for lives.
Yeah. I think that's sound advice, Mark, and you're talking in on your website again about the advanced beings from other worlds in your solar system and beyond are currently helping our world to advance spiritually. Now, does that in any way relate to what a lot of people feel leading up to 2012 is going to be a big upliftment that is sometimes referred to as ascension?
Certainly wouldn't. Well, difficult question, but I would say that I don't know what's going to happen in 2012, and I don't know anyone who I feel confident does know. There are various prophecies I'm told relating to 2012. These prophecies could be outdated. The purpose of all prophecy is to either change the prophecy or to live up to the prophecy. If it's a prophecy of gloom and doom, the only reason it's given by any spiritual intelligence is so that we can avert that gloom and doom by spiritual service, by hard work, by pulling ourselves together and following the divine laws. If it's a prophecy of great peace and joy, the reason we're given that prophecy is to inspire us so that we can work for that and deserve that. There is no such thing as a fatalistic prophecy, not a genuine one anyway.
No.
It is always up to us to make or break any prophecy. Now, with the contact that Dr. King had with extraterrestrials and the work that he did in his own right and under their direction, many catastrophes have been averted, and the whole karma of the human race has changed upon Earth. So what may have been a valid prophecy 2,000 years ago in South America or Mexico or wherever people think it was may not have much relevance for us today, is my opinion. I don't want to be dogmatic about it because I don't know enough about it, and I'm not wise enough, psychic enough, or spiritual enough to give you categorical answers. But rather than looking at these prophecies too much and dwelling on them and assuming that such and such is definitely going to happen, I would say that we'd all be better off just trying to be the best possible people that we can. That way, whatever happens, at the very least, we'll know we've done our best.
Yes. There seems to be some firm opinion that since the year 2000, the consciousness of mankind has actually risen quite a lot, and it has in a way invalidated a lot of the older prophecies because we have moved beyond them. So I think in a manner of speaking, this is really what you're saying, isn't it? You can't hold firm to any of them.
I wouldn't necessarily pinpoint the year 2000 as a particularly significant date, but I think, I certainly hope anyway, that it's the case that consciousness is rising. I think it's definitely rising in certain quarters, in certain ways, But we still got a lot of lessons to learn, and sometimes it seems like we take one step forward and two steps back. So, you know, we should never be complacent about this. And any consciousness shift that is taking place, however much help we get from extraterrestrial beings, we have to still work for it. That they will do everything they possibly can to help us to advance spiritually, but they can't do it for us. We have to make the effort, and we're told, actually, that if we take one step towards them, they will take two towards us.
Yes.
So, whatever our beliefs, we can all do something in the way of service to others. And this, whether we believe in them or not, is in a sense a step towards them.
Now, I'll ask you what I think is possibly a very difficult question to answer. But at this time, what do you feel is needed to bring people together?
Bring people together in what way? Sorry to throw the question back at you.
Well, I believe that if we can put aside our differences, religious beliefs, political, cultural, or whatever, the unity of people coming together and then trying to approach the oneness which should really exist would be very beneficial to us and Mother Earth. So how would we achieve that?
Well, I think the first thing to look at, I'm not trying to be difficult here, but the first thing to look at would be what form that oneness took. Now, I don't think it would be a good idea, for example, if the whole world were to unite in a common love of communism or fascism, you see. So there's unity and there's unity. Just because people are together does not mean they're right. And I think actually this is an interesting point, is a slight malaise in our society at the moment, in England anyway, is there's a lot of stress on harmony, a lot of emphasis on the importance of getting along with one another. And of course, you know, there's nothing wrong with getting along with one another, but it depends how we're getting along with one another. You know, what's the motivation behind it? You could get a bunch of 10 vicious murderers who got along very well together. It's not just about getting along, it's not just about being one. It's more about, you know, being right, frankly. Now, if you have a group of people, or better still, the whole world, who come together in truth, even though they may have certain disagreements or different emphases of what's important and what isn't, but if we are fundamentally united in a love of divinity, in trying to help one another as best we can, then, of course, this would be a wonderful thing. And I think the world would be utterly transformed overnight. It would just be utterly outstanding. Not only would obvious things happen, like if everyone came together, there would be no wars, of course. That would be one wonderful thing that would happen. But I think we'd notice other things would happen that might be a bit less expected. Like, it's hard to be hard and fast about this, but it may well be that the weather would improve, that natural disasters would be lessened, things like that, because the karma of mankind would not require these things so much. The nature spirits, the devas, would not be given so much negative energy by our wrong thought and action as they are now. So they wouldn't have to create the difficult natural conditions that, you know, people have to face on this earth. So it could be a lot more far-reaching than even just common sense would initially lead us to believe.
Yes, indeed.
I think also, actually, that, you know, if we really came together like that, in a spiritual way, it's extremely likely that there would be a lot more extraterrestrial presence in our skies that we could see. There would be more open contact with extraterrestrial beings, in fact, because we would then be ready, or more ready, to receive their teaching, to receive their technology. One of the reasons why they don't present themselves openly is because we're just not up to it. If they were to share with us some of their technology, all we'd do is use it to destroy ourselves, to cause havoc. There's a wonderful communication given by a being from Venus and a being from Mars, the Master of Sirius and the Master Mars Sector 6, respectively, through Dr. King in the early days, probably in the 50s, in response to people on Earth saying, well, give us a sign if you're out there. And the response of these extraterrestrial beings is, you give us a sign. If scientists give extraterrestrial beings the sign that they will correctly use extraterrestrial technology, by correctly using the technology they have at present, then, you know, that would be a sign. That would be a sign that those scientists were ready to receive that technology. But at the moment, the sign that we're giving extraterrestrial beings is that whatever they give us, we'd either take no notice of, or very little notice of, or misuse in some way. And they're not going to respond to that sign.
No, I do agree with you on that, and it is true to say that the elite that are, if you like, the government behind all other governments that really control the Earth, think in that way. Anything that is discovered that could be used for the benefit of man is used in a selfish way for them and their ambitions. So I think you're quite correct there, but how do we change that?
Well, we can change that in many ways. We can all help make the world a better place. As Gandhi said, be the change you want to see in the world. We all have certain power, whether that power be money, even if we don't have very much, time, you know, basic energy that we use. We can all improve. We can all give extraterrestrials a sign that we want them to come, we're ready for them to come, and that we will do our best to cooperate with their compassionate divine science when they do come, just by doing our best. Whether you're, you know, unemployed with no money and ill health, to if you're a millionaire genius, we can all do something to show that we are making an effort to do our best to improve ourselves, in the sense of we're trying our best to help others.
Yes.
Sometimes you have to help yourself first before you can be of much help to others. But you'd be surprised what you can do even without helping yourself all that much.
Mm.
From giving to charity, to doing voluntary work, to saying prayers, to giving spiritual teaching, to being a great artist, or helping science in a positive way. All kinds of things we can do. Now, in the Aetherius Society, we think that the root problem of our problems on Earth is the spiritual energy crisis. If the spiritual energy crisis was solved, all other energy crises would sort themselves out. What this means is that by invoking spiritual energy through prayer, positive prayer, particularly when it's done in a yogic way, there's certain techniques of praying in a particularly potent way, also through other spiritual practices, but mainly service-orientated spiritual practices, rather than just meditating for our own peace and enlightenment. By doing this, we will invoke spiritual energy, and we can send it out to those in need, just like I described before with healing, not to brainwash them or make them come under our command like some kind of perverted love spell, but giving them the energy that they need to heal themselves. Because it always boils down to the individual. If there was more spiritual energy and people accepted this on Earth, their consciousnesses, our consciousnesses, would rise. if our consciousnesses rose, then all other problems would sort themselves out. An advanced spiritual person with a high level of spiritual consciousness will not go to war, you know, for the sake of greed and what have you, like people do on Earth today, or ignorance.
Yes.
They will not hoard money while people starve. They will not oppress people. They will not hide the truth from people. Someone with a high spiritual consciousness, I don't mean high in a druggy sense, of course,
no.
High in a natural sense, they will use all their energy for divine purposes, the number one of which will be not to harm others, but to help others. So this is the great answer to Earth's problems, is spiritual energy. Other forms of service are great, like going off to a third world country and helping malnourished children. That is fantastic, and I don't want to knock that at all. And such people who do that, I think, are very brave, and much braver than I am in many, many respects.
Yes.
However,
yeah.
if you, whatever we do to help the physical problems on Earth, good though that is, it still boils down to how people think that causes the problems. You could save a million lives, and that would be a wonderful thing to do. I don't want to knock that in any way.
No.
But, you know, it's about the more important point is how people are going to change.
Yes, indeed.
You know, no,
I'm going to have to start talking in terms of closing the program. We have a few minutes left.
Yeah, sure.
But what I want to do, because I believe you invite emails if people want to contact you, you can give out your email address, and I believe you have two websites that people might be interested in. So I'll give you a couple of minutes to deal with that.
Thank you very much, Mike. Yes, the website that I would recommend is the Aetherius Society site, which is www.aetherius.org. And I'll spell the word Aetherius because it's quite tricky to spell. A-E-T-H-E-R-I-U-S for sugar. And if you didn't get that, just Google George King UFOs and you're sure to find it sooner or later. That's the Aetherius Society worldwide, where you can find your local branch or group. My email address, if anyone wants to ask me anything personally, is info@markinfo.co.uk. And I'd like to give out two phone numbers, if I may. The American headquarters, which is based in Los Angeles, and that number is 800-800-1354. That's a free phone number. And our phone number in the UK, which is an ordinary phone number, is 0207-736-4187.
Mark, I think it might be wise to repeat the number for your people in the US again.
Okay. It's 800-800-1354. And that's a free phone number. It's the only one we have in the Aetherius Society. And our staff there would be very happy to talk to you. I've known many of them for many years. And many of them have the privilege of working with Dr. King very closely for literally decades. So they can probably give far greater wisdom than I can on these subjects.
Mm. Right. Now, there's a sort of closing comment. What sort of advice would you give to people who are listening in and want to do something for themselves to increase their spiritual awareness or development? I know you've mentioned about giving themselves in service, but are there any other ways? I mean, would reading books to gain knowledge be of help?
Well, I'm afraid I have to give... there's only really one answer I can give to that, and that is quite simply to contact the Aetherius Society, because I know I'm biased because I'm in the Aetherius Society, but there's a reason that I'm in it, and that reason is I've studied a lot of philosophies and teachings, and great though many of them are, nothing compares to this. and anyone who really wants to make a difference in the world and to become wiser and more spiritual, I could not recommend a better path.
Right, that's fine. Thank you very much, Mark, for coming onto the program, and our listeners won't actually know that you came on at very short notice, which I very much appreciate. It's been a very interesting talk with you. I'm sure you'll get some interest from our listeners. And all it remains now is for me to advise our listeners of our guests for next week, who are two sisters, Tina and Tilda, who have recently written a book called A Book of Insight. I have read it in preparation for the program, and I can tell you it comes from what I consider to be a very high level of spiritual knowledge, and I know for certain you'll find it a very, very interesting interview. So I must thank you for being with me today, and I'm sure you've had a very interesting time. I hope you can be with me next week, so it only remains to say God bless you all. Thank you.